across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Monday morning, August 12th, 2024. It is another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, or through the app, or over social media, or by podcast. We thank you so much for subscribing and taking us along on your day. I got a question for you. I have several to start the week, of course. Remember when Aerosmith and Run DMC, you know, came together to do a crossover of Walk This Way? Wouldn't you like to see the same thing with Metallica and the Backstreet Boys? That, boys and girls, is a sample of the kind of chatter that Greg Bach and I have before 6 a.m. And maybe should self-edit a little bit more often, but that seemed too good a topic not to share as we're looking at today's history lesson and like, where's the common thread here? There is no common thread, but if they would just work on a song together, maybe that would do it. Good morning, Mr. Bach.
Good morning. And I have a very simple, very easy answer for your question about Backstreet Boys and Metallica.
No, God! No, God, please, no! No! No!
Yeah, it might not work.
Right. In the time like back like 10 years ago when like metal bands were doing mashups with rap groups, Metallica did a song with, I can't remember his name anymore. He was a terrible version of Tupac, but, and he was very popular, and I can't remember his name right now, but they did a song together, and I'm like, this is terrible. I'm an open-minded person. Like, do your thing, have fun, try mixing genres, but this was objectively bad.
Okay. Well, now I have to know what this is. So, you know, I do see a quick Google shows Miley Cyrus and Metallica doing Nothing Else Matters.
Mm-hmm. They've worked together. Yep, they've worked together. Okay. Elton John called Nothing Else Matters one of the greatest songs ever written, and the lead singer, James, started to cry when he heard that.
Chris Stapleton does a version of Nothing Else Matters. Yeah. So we're going to learn things about, Pat's going to learn things about Metallica today.
Shoot, the whole second hour is just me talking.
I can deal with that. That would be good. So that was my question to kick things off. My original question was whether it's in the middle of the night, if you have to get up for some reason or whenever, you ever hit your little toe just so hard and you just want to cry or scream, but you can't wake up the person that is there in the room with you. Yeah. And so you just, the tears just well up and you go, so there we go. We have that. That's how my work week started. Here's what we're going to talk about today at a rally over the weekend in Las Vegas. Vice President Kamala Harris said she would work to eliminate taxes on tips for hospitality workers. Former President Donald Trump accused her of copying him, but let me give you a tip. There will be a massive difference between one plan that will also raise the minimum wage for hospitality workers, and someone else's plan that will basically allow hedge fund managers to be paid $1 and then get a seven-figure gratuity after that. So we'll talk about how this all came to be. And like many things, the answer has something to do with Reaganomics. And then in our second hour, we'll get into more details about the 2024 Summer Olympics coming to a close in Paris, basically putting Los Angeles on the clock for 2028. So we'll have some highlights from the weekend's sports and closing ceremonies. We'll have Selena Heller along as well, more of what she learned from last week's Harris-Walz rally here in the Chippewa Valley. And also more about Project 2025. There's so much in this. There's so much badness. And in this case, we'll talk about how much more it would cost families to feed their kids so that they could have lunch and even breakfast at school. And Civic Media News Director Terry Bell has three stories that the Civic Media Newsroom will be following to start the week. Along the way, feel free to give us a call, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can call that number or just send us a text message. You can do the same thing through the app where you can text or call us, or you can comment on Facebook or YouTube where you can also see what we're doing over here live and in person through the magic of video. Brittany Merlot will be along as well. So over the weekend, Greg, you said you saw little to none of the closing ceremonies or any Olympics at all. You had a busy three-show weekend at the Laughing Tap, and it was also nice weather-wise. So, yeah, probably not a lot of people parked in front of the TV.
Yeah, it was a busy one. I was working on I did something that I haven't done. So, such a terrible admission. But I mowed the lawn yesterday, which is the first time in a long time that I did it 2 weeks in a row versus like, let it grow for a wither week. I know. And it was like amazing because it usually takes me like 2 hours, 2.5 hours to do everything, all the stuff. This took me one Queens of the Stone Age album, 49 minutes. I was done. I was like, am I done? It was amazing. So, but we're out with Maybelle, but we, you know, did a little celebrating because it was her birthday. So we went out and did some nice long walks and just tried to stay outside a lot this weekend.
Yeah, it was really nice.
God, even yesterday wasn't too hot. It was warm, yeah. But it wasn't like, all right, everyone's got to stay inside.
You were mentioned over the weekend by Dan Schumacher. He had his big backyard birthday bash.
Aww.
Where once again, as in years past, he has a local cover band that does nothing but Grateful Dead tunes.
Nice.
In the backyard. Yep, he's got all the Grateful Dead decorations and things, and you know, he understands you have this little side hustle on the weekends. Yeah. Here, but he'd love to get you up here one of these years for that particular party. We'll see if we can plan it out for like, you know, like you had the club closed this year because the Harley weekend was so crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe we can work out something next year. We'll see about that.
Or so, Pat, I could just, and then hear me out, take a weekend off.
That's funny. Yeah. That's funny. You crazy entrepreneur. There is an election tomorrow. Be sure that you go vote if you haven't already cast your absentee ballot. If you need information on where to go vote and what's on your ballot, the place to go is the Wisconsin Elections Commission voter website, myvote.wi.gov. Again, myvote.wi.gov. I realized that between the radio show and trying to make videos and everything that I sometimes am neglecting my own social media, and I'd had enough people over the past few days call or text me and say, what's the deal on these constitutional amendments? I'm like, oh, I guess I haven't pontificated more beyond this show where I told them in my post this morning to vote no and no. Take it from someone who's been watching the legislature for a very long time and was even in it for a short time. The proposed constitutional amendments are coming from people who are trying to pull a fast one after having earned zero trust when it comes to financial management. These are lawmakers, I would remind people, who are currently sitting on millions and millions and millions of state dollars that they have already approved in their own budget bill, but they are refusing to, quote-unquote, release the money unless they can force Governor Tony Evers to do things that weren't in the original budget bill. For example, as listeners to this show can probably cite from memory by now, they approved $125 million in their own budget bill to clean up contaminated water with PFAS chemicals. But they will not, quote-unquote, release the money until they can blackmail Evers and Wisconsinites into not going after the original corporate polluters. And they're doing similar things with already approved money for school literacy and for childcare and for Chippewa Valley healthcare and more. And I put release the money in quotes because it's a tactic that is kind of a veto they gave themselves that a court is eventually going to say shouldn't exist. They already know they don't have the votes to override Governor Evers' vetoes, so they have found a way to create their own veto of the governor. And in time, it will be tossed, but for now, it's enabling them to sit on all these state dollars. Well, if these two constitutional amendments pass, they can do to federal dollars especially emergency aid, what they're already doing to the state dollars. I mean, imagine all the pandemic relief that kept the Wisconsin economy afloat. And imagine that money had been gummed up, bottled up all this time so that Republicans could try to blackmail Evers into sending a bunch of it to corporate tax breaks, for example, instead of small businesses. And you're saying that wouldn't really happen, would it? Remember, this is the same group of lawmakers, a legislature controlled by Republicans, that refused to put a multi-billion-dollar surplus to work in 2022. They sat on it the entire year because they had hoped that Tim Michaels would become governor, and then they could blow it all on special favors for their wealthiest donors and friends. So these guys haven't earned the trust to have these constitutional amendments passed and would allow them to simply sit on federal money the way that they do with state dollars. Legislative candidate Alicia Saunders writes in on Facebook, "I tell people when I'm knocking on doors all about the PFAS money and Chippewa Valley money, when talking about these amendments, the shock and disgust I see is almost 100%. Exactly. And that's why I was trying to get that out this morning on social media. And I hope that you will share with friends and family as well the importance of voting no tomorrow. But however you want to vote and whatever you want to vote on, to find out how to do it, go to myvote.wi.gov. That's again, myvote.wi.gov to find out where to vote and what's on your ballot. Because there are definitely things on the ballot that are important in some places. Up in Northeast Wisconsin, for Republican voters, there's a three-candidate primary to run for Congress. The winner will take on Democrat Kristen Lierley, whom we'll hear from in just a bit. In the 3rd Congressional District, there are three Democrats looking to run against Republican incumbent Derek Van Orden. And coming up after this break, we're going to hear from William Garcia, the chair of the 3rd Congressional District Democrats. I talked to him at the Harris-Walz rally last week in the Chippewa Valley about whether the 3rd Congressional District Democrats can come out united after tomorrow's primary and focus on the task at hand, which for them would be unseating Derek Van Orden on November 5th. So that's coming up, along with an update on the Brewers and more in just a sec. But first, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this gorgeous Monday morning, when you're here, you're up north. Live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network, I'm Pat Kreitlow. You can follow us for all we do at upnorthnewswi.com. Back in a bit. Now, I try to know the music that I know, but then there's music I don't know. And last week, who did I confuse Metallica with?
Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden, yeah. So I need to confirm these things. This is Backstreet Boys. I'm not confusing Metallica and Backstreet Boys, right?
Correct.
This is Metallica. Okay, good.
Yes, that's right. This is Metallica's later work. 97's We've Got It Going On, the radio edit.
The radio edit. Perfect. All right, we'll tell you why these guys are all in today's history lesson coming up in just a bit. The Cincinnati Reds beat the Brewers on Sunday 4-3. That snapped the Brewers' 5-game winning streak, and the Reds avoided a sweep, beating the Brewers for only the 13th time in their last 47 meetings. The Brewers did take 2 out of 3 this weekend for their 9th straight series victory against the Reds. Joey Ortiz hit a 2-run homer. D.L. Hall was back for the first time since April. He missed about 4 months, injuring his knee while fielding a bunt. He's back. He gave up the Reds' go-ahead homer, but still felt like he'd made good progress in just being able to pitch again, including a career-high 9 strikeouts in 4 2/3 innings. The Brewers, your first-place Milwaukee Brewers, now lead the Cardinals by 7.5 games in the National League Central. But everything up until now may not matter very much, because what starts tonight is a 4-game series at home against the Los Angeles Dodgers, one of the best teams in the National League. And so these 4 games could be very pivotal toward determining how the Brewers are going to do for the rest of the future and the future of the regular season and hopefully into the playoffs. Freddie Peralta will get the start for the Brewers. You can catch the pregame starting at 6:35. First pitch at 7:10 on stations that include WRCE in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, WISS in Oshkosh. And yeah, how many runs, Greg, how many runs they scored in that five game winning streak? Because some of those scores were like football scores,
yeah.
You know, like 16-7 and things like that.
Yeah, I thought I had the correct number. It wasn't 40. It was 44 runs in five games.
44 runs.
16-7 was one of them. I mean, it was like, yeah. It was 10-0, 8-5, 16-7, 8-3. I mean, crushing them.
Offense. It always feels good to do that. So again, four game series against the Dodgers coming up this weekend. All right, there is, like I said, a big election tomorrow. There are also some 42 different primaries in assembly districts and I believe 5 primaries in various state Senate districts. So it really is worth your while to go take a look at whether there might be a primary going on where you are and to read up as best you can about the candidates or maybe put out feelers and talk to people who do know the candidates. In some cases, you may find clear distinctions between candidates, even though they're all Democrats or they're all Republicans. Somebody may just strike you as, you know, the better leader. Somebody might strike you as too moderate or not moderate enough, whatever the case may be. One of the more spirited primaries is taking place in western Wisconsin and parts of central Wisconsin in the 3rd Congressional District. And over the, last weekend at the Harris-Walz rally in Eau Claire, I ran into William Garcia, the chair of the La Crosse County Democratic Party and chair of the 3rd Congressional District Democrats, about the primary that involves State Representative Katrina Shanklin and Eau Claire business owner Rebecca Cook and also Eric Wilson of the Eau Claire area. And Shanklin and Cook have been really starting to go after one another, whether it's in, you know, statements to the media or perhaps in their commercials. And so I asked Garcia about that. You're going to hear his answer. I asked him about 3 different things, and he's going to address the primary last. I asked him as well about Western Wisconsin and whether turnout is going to be helped in November because the governor of next door Minnesota, Tim Walz, is on the ballot. But I started by asking just about the entire mood among Democrats after President Biden made his decision to essentially pass on the generational torch to Vice President Harris.
Oh, I think it says that Democrats are the party that is looking at the future. I think for a long time we've been the party that are worried about the future. We're trying to make education more accessible so that our future looks brighter. We're trying to make childcare more affordable so that people can have more families. We're trying to increase the child tax credit. There are so many things and so many ways, and of course, all of the environmental issues that Democrats have been fighting for years in order to protect generations in the future. And I think that this is just another way of ensuring that our future is sound here in America. So here in the 3rd Congressional District, which is right on the Mississippi River, I live just about 3 miles from the Minnesota border. We've been watching with envy the last 2 years as Tim Walz has led this incredible track record of accomplishments once the Democrats took power. And I think it's great because we're going to be able to take that nationwide. We're going to be able to go and say, look, Minnesota has accomplished paid family leave, universal school lunch, red flag laws, all sorts of these incredible policies were enacted under Tim Walz. And now we get to go around the country and say, look, we can do this here too. And I'm so excited to do that. We're going to come out unified. We're going to come out strong. And no matter who wins the 3rd Congressional District, we are going to unify behind that person. And we're going to fight like heck because we know that Republican Representative Derek Van Orden is such a kind of embarrassment nationwide that we're going to fix that. And we're going to turn the 3rd CD back to being blue where it belongs.
So again, that was William Garcia. He's the 3rd Congressional District Democratic chair commenting at the rally last week. I did go a step further and I asked him quite bluntly, because I was, you know, I'm hearing all the concerns about a Democratic Party that might be fractured, given after a spirited primary, and might the person who comes in second place, as well as third place, just essentially take their ball and go home and maybe not campaign with all the energy and enthusiasm needed if you're going to unseat an incumbent. So I asked him quite directly. I said, can I put you down as being the official butt kicker of anybody who is not doing their fair share of the work after the primary if they don't win the primary? And I have him on tape saying, absolutely, he will be the one. And you're saying, why, Pat, why are you making a big deal about this? Because I've seen this before. I've been to that rodeo where somebody gets down and look, I understand it. I've never been in a primary election, but I can definitely understand how it would be rather dispiriting, and people might want to say, well, I'm not going to help that so-and-so. Well, you don't have to help that so-and-so directly, but you can still make the case about, in this case, Derek Van Orden, as well as Kamala Harris, as well as Tammy Baldwin, as well as a host of what are going to be more competitive legislative races now because of the new maps. So I'm going to state this very clearly. I like Katrina Shanklin, and I like Rebecca Cook, and I've enjoyed interviewing Eric Wilson. We've interviewed all three of them two different times, and every one of them would be a fantastic alternative to Congress. They each have their strong points and their weak points, and that is for the individual voter to decide. Any one of those three not only would be a good alternative to Congress, but any one of those three deserve the support and enthusiasm from everybody in that third district, even if their preferred candidate doesn't win. There's just too much at stake in a closely divided Congress for anybody to sit on their hands after tomorrow. We'll talk about the various proposals to lift taxes on tips coming up next. You're up north. More Metallica and Backstreet Boys music still ahead here on this Monday, August 12th. Including that one, but the beginning is so nice. It's just really nice bumper music there. To bring in Dr. Kristen Lierley, our regular Monday guest co-host. How are you this morning?
Good Monday morning, my friend.
She's feeling the vibe there. Mm-hmm. This is a girl who can dance to just about anything, as evidenced by the video clip sent by Renee Popolam last night, actually, of the two of you polka dancing, I'm guessing, right before a parade stepped off.
We were lined up, and the polka band came by playing the classic, I don't want her, you can have her, she's too fat for me.
Yes.
And we just bounded into form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Metallica did a version of that, too. I didn't realize it was National Polka Day over the weekend. I completely missed that.
The 9th, yeah. And, I mean, polka is such a huge part of our heritage that, like, it's a thing. It's fundamental.
Oh, without a doubt. As I've said before.
As I've said before, Pat says.
As he freezes. Oh, no. Dr. Lierley, it's your show right now. Oh, there he is. He's back. Never mind. You're fired. He's back.
I hate when I get the little Wi-Fi symbol that shows up in my window here. And I'm like, and I hear you guys going, oh, there he goes. I'm like, I'm right here. I'm right here.
We went full op on that one, guys.
Yep. As I thought I was saying before. After being, you know, married, our wedding was 38 years ago, still the last wedding reception we've been to with a full-time polka band. Not cover bands, not records or anything, but they did nothing but polkas. And, you know, because both of our families, that was what you did, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you being from the Kaukauna area, obviously, same thing. My in-laws are out there. They still watch Molly B every Saturday night. They watch the Big Joe Polka Show. Even though Big Joe hasn't been with us for a while now, but it's kind of like American Bandstand. You know, they know the dancers, they know the couples, they know the venues. They're like, oh yeah, we danced at that place or we danced at that place. And, you know, it's still a fun little subculture, even if it isn't as big as it used to be.
Mm-hmm. And it's good exercise.
You and Dr. Kreitlow are coming to Milwaukee this weekend, Saturday. When are you going to be here?
This coming weekend, we'll be there. We're making a special guest appearance at the Laughing Tap on Saturday night. Yes,
but will you be here in Milwaukee area on Friday?
We will, but we'll be getting there a little late because Dr. Kreitler does have to be a doctor for a good part of the day.
Boom.
So we'll be getting down there into the evening hours. Why?
I was just
going to
say,
on?
Lakefront Brewery has their Friday night fish fry, which features a live polka band.
Yeah.
You shut up.
No, it's true. But you have to get there early if you want fish. Well, they only have so much fish.
And
you
I won't worry about that.
And you can make a reservation. You can call them and make a reservation for you and Dr. Kreitler. Yeah. And especially if you're going to be there later in the evening, you should be fine. But if you make a reservation, I would do it. But yeah, live polka band.
I happen to know that Dr. Kreitler listens through the Civic Media app through Bluetooth on her car. So
she's sending you a message, right? Makeup.
I know she's already going, all right, we're going to cancel our 2 o'clock and our 3 o'clock and we're and tell them, sorry, Dr. Kreitler can't see you. There's a polka emergency that has come up. So Alicia writes in, you know you're in Wisconsin when everyone said, oh, when the signal goes wonky.
Right.
That checks out.
In rural Wisconsin, it is acceptable, even though there is a healthcare crisis and there aren't enough doctors and it's hard to get an appointment. A polka emergency is an acceptable reason.
And to Dr. Kreitler's a patients who she wanted to see on that Friday, I'm sorry to poke a holes into her schedules.
Oh boy.
All right. He's thinking about a transition. Thinking
whatever.
No, let's just go. Let's go to our next topic here. So I wanted to talk a bit about something in the presidential campaign because obviously your general election campaign starts after tomorrow when you find out which of the three Republicans emerges from tomorrow's primary, and things are going to get really busy for you, really serious, as if they weren't already. So let me take it up to an issue at the national level. And mentioned that Vice President Kamala Harris was at a rally in Vegas yesterday, I think it was, and was in Arizona on Friday night. And so it ends that whole swing state tour. But in Vegas, in a city, you know, known for all of its many hospitality workers, she talked about getting rid of taxes on tips. And former President Trump accused her of being a copycat, that he had already proposed that. But I think most people would catch on pretty quickly that whichever one of them wins, whichever one submits a plan to get rid of taxes on tips, those plans are going to look very, very different. And I'll explain more in a minute. But first, I wanted to find out Dr. Lyerly's experience with tipped work. I, for one, have been a waiter at two different Mexican restaurants, which is a weird coincidence, but I promise you, just a coincidence. Dr. Lyerly, any tipped work in your past? I mean, and not the usual after you deliver a baby, the dad, you know, slips you a 20 and says, good job, you know, be on your way. Beyond that, any waiting tables, anything like that?
Yeah, there was one brief not shining moment where I was a server and it was not good. I am not good at that job.
What would you, was it that you couldn't remember their order or?
I talk too much.
I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing to be social. Or were people like customers actually looking at you like, yeah, you need to go now?
No, I would be sitting at the table, standing by the table, just having a conversation with my customers while other customers were waiting for things.
Yes. So yeah. Okay. That I'm familiar with. Yes.
And that is like a perpetual problem for mm-hmm. me. I need people to drag me away. I have a hard time. I know. I have a hard time saying goodbye.
Yeah. Yep. You've got that mastered. I rather enjoyed doing it. I wasn't always good at it, as evidenced by the one time when I was carrying bottles of beer on a tray and slipped, and one of the bottles of beer just completely poured down the back of a woman at the table. Yeah, that wasn't very fun. But by and large, it was fine. I've always had a problem with this whole notion that the minimum wage for tipped staff is not the $7.25 an hour that is the federal rule. And by the way, hasn't been changed in like 15 years, way overdue. Mm-hmm. But that you can, as an employer, you can pay somebody in some states, it's like $2.15 an hour. And then you're just expected to make it all up in tips, which at that point, it's not really a tip, is it? It's like you're either getting paid or you're not getting paid. It's ridiculous. And I thought, well, who started this nonsense about taxing tips and treating them as income. Kristen, any guess at the answer?
Ronald Reagan.
It's always, it always comes back to Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. It all comes back to in 1981, Reagan getting elected and putting in a massive tax cut. The corporate tax rate went from like 74% to 28% or something like that. And go figure, the next year, they'd blown a hole in the budget. So in 1982, there was a new tax bill, which allowed for taxing on Social Security. So when people gripe about that, that was Reagan. Taxes on Social Security. Taxes on your unemployment benefits. That was Reagan, which again, that's not income. Unemployment is something every worker pays into. You're just getting your own money back. But that came from Reagan. And making sure that employers report all tips so that they can be taxed as income. So, you know, that was a Reagan thing. So now fast forward, what do you think the Trump thing is going to be when he talks about getting rid of the tax on tips? I mean,
Reagan is different. Predictable. Trump is less predictable. So I'm not sure, Pat.
I believe, and I've seen this posted quite a bit as well. The details that have been run by a couple of different think tanks, depending on where they draw the line, keep in mind that if you're getting paid like, you know, $2.15 or $4 an hour or something, you're not going to pay income taxes already. So what good does a tax cut do you if you're already not paying taxes because your income's so low? So you would get very little benefit out of this. But now imagine you're a hedge fund manager. And I'm now going to work for the salary of $1. And everything else that I make is a seven-figure gratuity. That's what a Donald Trump plan is likely to look like. And so I think that when you're knocking on doors, when legislative candidates are knocking on doors, and they hear all this, oh, Kamala Harris is copying Donald Trump and not taxing on tips, I'm sure that you, like lots of other smart politicians, go, you know, the devil's going to be in the details. Let's see how that all shakes out first. Mr. Buck.
I had a thought, too. Like, if you look at just the restaurant side of it, you take away the hedge fund idea. Mm-hmm. With the restaurant side, I think if you take away the taxing of the tips and the worker can somehow make more money and keep more money in their pocket, I think you're still going to come up against restaurant owners who are going to then screw with their payment systems. Like, oh, well, now we're going to pay you this, and we're going to keep 10% because now you don't have to pay. So now we can keep. I just feel like it's going to just absolutely hose the worker no matter what.
Which gets you to what Vice President Harris is saying. It's not just about taxes on tips, but finally raising the minimum wage. And mm-hmm. Kristen, there are so many minimum wage workers, and they're not kids in your district. They're trying to raise a kid. They're adults, and these are the jobs that they can find, and they haven't had a raise in so long.
And we know that when we raise wages, people do better. That's what lifts people out of poverty. We've got all of these Band-Aids, these tax credits, these things that help certain pieces of the population. But if everyone can make a living wage, everyone does better. Mm-hmm. It's common sense.
And it makes sense that if you're getting a wage for being a hospitality worker, that be uniform. Mm-hmm. Because when people say, well, you know, what about this minimum wage and then the tips? The tips that a waitress makes at a high-end country club restaurant are going to be a lot more than the tips that a single mom makes waiting tables third shift at a truck stop. And I know this from personal experience. That's how my mom got into the workforce, where she started working overnights, and I'd have to watch her siblings overnights while she's working at a truck stop. Worked her way up because she's a damn hard worker. Worked her way up to other places and other places, and finally got to working at this really nice country club. Waited tables her whole adult life till she retired. And the tip structure is a lot different. And so it is so important to raise that hourly wage so that you're not, you know, giving a bigger tax break to wait staff who happen to be at higher end restaurants than those who are scrimping and saving and just trying to get through life. Those are the folks that we need politicians looking out for.
Hey, I think that the whole thing that this conversation is based on, the entire premise, tips, that's the problem. I mean, mm-hmm. when you look at our whole tipping structure and what has happened with tips throughout COVID, how now even when you go to Subway and you get counter service, they ask you if you want a tip. Yes. It's just really gotten out of control. And that's happening here in this country. But when people from outside of the United States come to visit, they didn't understand it to begin with. And now it's just shocking. So I think our tipping culture really needs to be addressed.
It does, because it is, again, it's supposed to be something extra. It's not your livelihood should not depend on whether people throw money at you or not, because at that point, I mean, you may as well just get, you know, you might as well be an organ grinder and get a monkey to walk, run around with a tin cup, you know, yeah. Just whatever money you can throw at me, please, sir. No. If you're working for somebody, you're working for somebody and should be paid accordingly with that. So again, just the bottom line here is that's one of the topics that's kicking off the week is, you know, when both Kamala Harris and Donald Trump talk about taxes on tips and tipped income. Be very careful about how people are defining tips and income. Be very careful about who's covered by all of this and who's really going to get helped and who's not going to get helped, depending on whose proposal were to pass. They are not apples to apples by any stretch of the imagination. All right, I think we're ready to learn the difference between Metallica and the Backstreet Boys. I've been getting them mixed up all this time, but they are two very distinct sets of today's history lesson, Kristen, if you're ready to learn along with me.
Can we dance?
Yes, absolutely.
You can mosh.
Yeah. is that what they do at Backstreet
Monday
Boys?
Moshing. Monday morning moshing.
Kay on Facebook, I hate tipping. It always feels awkward. Absolutely right. Couldn't agree more. Like the places like Eau Claire restaurants, they basically say, hey, we're raising your prices. You don't have to tip. We're giving them a living wage. Mm-hmm. And what a refreshing change that is. Selena Heller joins us as well for today's history lesson next. You're up north. Like I said, more Metallica coming up here on Up North News Radio in just a bit. But first, after years on the road, the Commodores finally got their first number one hit. When Lionel Richie wrote this little ballad, Three Times a Lady, the Commodores' first number one hit this day in 1978. Welcome to today's history lesson. Dr. Kristen Lyerly is here. Selena Heller from Up North News is here as well. Ms. Heller, good morning. Did you have a good weekend?
Good morning. Oh, yes. Talking about all that music, memory saw her first kind of rock music. Brett Michaels at Ashley for the Arts.
Oh, my.
Yes. And she put her headband for her hair, and she dropped it down so she could wear it, you know, just like he does.
She's...
rocking out.
Oh, she's covering a bald spot too. All right, cool.
No. Oh, Emery, that's the less you learn about Brett Michaels, the better. Just enjoy the music.
We went on the inflatables during Brett Michaels and did all the family fun zone things and all the kids stuff.
Good. See, it's all about the kids. It's all about the kids. Lionel Richie had that number one hit for the Commodores in 78, and then 6 years later, on this day in 1984, the Los Angeles Summer Olympics came to a close, and he performed his latest hit song as part of the closing ceremony. We're going to party, caramba, fiesta, forever. Come on and sing along. Did either of you ladies watch the closing ceremonies from Paris yesterday? No.
Okay. Selena was up all night long.
Yeah, she was. So that might have explained part of it.
Beach.
Little trivia note here. It says, you know, the opening and closing ceremonies have, you know, all kinds of extras and volunteers. Apparently one of the backing dancers in Los Angeles was a young Cuba Gooding Jr. who was in there. Mm-hmm. And Los Angeles played a big role in the closing ceremonies last night. because the next Olympic Games will be in LA in 2028. So there was Tom Cruise leaping off the roof of the stadium in Paris last night and grabbing the Olympic flag and then riding off on a motorcycle to take it to Los Angeles. So, you know, if you were you not impressed by Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible with the Olympic flag?
If he didn't jump off of things all the time, I'd be like, that's amazing. I'm like, for Tom.
Yep. Jumper. All right. On this day in 1991, Metallica released their fifth album. It's self-titled, but commonly known as the Black Album. Why is that, Greg Bach?
Because it's all black with their logo barely visible, and then the Don't Tread on Me snake on there as well. Before Don't Tread on Me was a thing and it was political,
yeah,
it was a statement of them as a road band.
Yes, for those who've made it political, nobody is treading on you, sweetie.
You're just weird.
Here's one of the better known tunes off there, I'm told, called The Unforgiven. Does not sound like Metallica to me. Okay, maybe they're a little bit. It says here the album marked a change in the band's music from the thrash metal style of their previous four albums to a slower, heavier, more refined sound. It went number one in 8 countries, including the U.S., and has sold 16 million copies. That was on this day in 1991. 17 years later, on this day in 2008, Metallica released the lead single from their 9th studio album, Death Magnetic, with this song, The Day That Never Comes. Just keep them close,
keep praying, just keep waiting. I have this mental picture of Pat Kretlow's pontoon on Lake Wasoda blasting this song.
Was there a technical issue there, or was that... Wasn't that just the same song you played just before, or those are two different songs?
Okay, Patrick Jerome Kreitlow, I swear to God. I swear to God.
On this day in 1851, Isaac Singer was granted a patent for his...
sewing machine.
There you go, the Singer sewing machine. Let's see, the IBM personal computer was released on this day in 1981. Happy birthday to Anthony Ray, born in Seattle this day. Had a big song about backsides. You know Anthony Ray as Sir Mix-a-Lot. So
ladies, yeah. Roll my Mercedes, yes, I do. I'm a white boy.
And that's all I can really play at this hour in the morning of that song. On this, and it took a lot of looking at those lyrics to go, what 8 seconds can I play that isn't just too over the top? The Major League Baseball strike of 1994 started on this day and led to the cancellation of the 1994 World Series. Many people still see Bud Selig as, playing an instrumental role in that not working out, statue notwithstanding, at American Family Field. Richard Marx had the number one song this day in 1989. Okay, that's enough of that. We got to get to the Backstreet Boys here. Their self-titled debut album in America was released this day in 1997 and would go on to sell 14 million copies, which is almost as much as Metallica, but not quite. Quit playing games with my heart. All right, on the National Day calendar, this is Middle Child Day. Kristen, you have one sibling?
Middle children.
So no middle child. Selena?
I have 3 older siblings. I'm 9 years younger.
Okay. This is, in a related note, this is National Milkman Day, but since fewer and fewer people all the time get the joke, because there's not Milkman anymore, we're going to move on, which, I mean, it's right up there with Vinyl Record Day. I mean, seriously.
I have a Milkman. Every Thursday, they bring me milk. No joke, in glass bottles.
Of course they do. Yep.
This is World Elephant Day. This is National Julian Fries Day, which the difference between Julian fries and French fries is, I guess, the Julian fries are even thinner and like almost like matchstick type, if I understand correctly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And of course, it is still National Sandwich Month. Anybody have a really great sandwich over the weekend?
No.
No. I made a sandwich, but it wasn't great, but it was satisfying.
Okay. Well, that works. Yeah. Okay. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk to Selena Heller a bit more about the rally, the Walls-Harris rally in Eau Claire. And we're going to talk about Project 2025 and what it would do to school lunch programs across America as well. All that, plus Brittany Merlot with the forecast, Terry Bell with three things you need to know to start the week, all coming up in the second hour of Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.